What's cracking? We're into hour number two. I am Jim Rome, live in the Quicken Loan Studios in Southern California. Apply simply, understand fully, and mortgage confidently with Quicken Loans. All right, we start the second hour. Our telephone number is 1-800-636-8686. Go wherever you want with it. Make sure you have a take. Call with a take. Don't suck. Make the show better. Elevate the conversation. Do what you got to do. If you want to shoot me an email, do that. We'll go old school. Rome, R-O-M-E, at haveatake.com. Follow me on Twitter, at Jim Rome. Lots to get done. More phone calls coming up. But before I do anything else, we are joined right now by a forward for the Orlando Magic. He's tearing it up in the summer league right now. 14 points, 7 rebounds, and nearly 3 blocks per game in summer league play. He was an all-ACC freshman teamer at Florida State. He was the 6th pick overall back in 2017. We are joined by Jonathan Isaac. Jonathan, good morning. Great to have you on. How are you?
I'm good, Jim Rome. Thank you so much for having me.
Jonathan Isaac, great to have you. So I mentioned you're having a great summer league so far. The buzz is building around you and Mo Bamba, what the two of you can do together, especially defensively. So let me start right there. What has summer league been like for you so far?
Summer league has been great. It's been fun to get around Mo and experience our new coaching staff, the way they coach and the way they'll have practices in the future. So it's just been fun. It's been a real collective effort with our team, and it's been going great.
Now, you and Mo go back, of course, to your days of growing up in New York City. So what's it like being teammates on the same NBA team with him right now?
It's cool. I know Mo from AAU ball and USA ball and traveling and all that stuff. So it's great to have a previous connection with them, and I'm just looking forward to the future.
Dude, what's that like? I mean, when you say that you grew up with a kid like that and you played AAU ball and you go way back, does it all seem normal and natural, like this is what we all expected to happen? Or is there a part of it that's like, damn, I mean, I knew this kid growing up, and now we're playing NBA together?
Yeah, no, I would say I didn't know him that well. Not like we went to the same school or anything like that. Just AAU tournaments and things like that, seeing him all the time. He was on the Nike Elite team when we went to Bahamas, and I was there as well. So just like little times of seeing him and playing against him and playing with him. So I wouldn't say we were super cool or know each other that well, but there is a previous connection.
I got it. Jonathan Isaac, my guest. Now, you were talking the other day about how the fact is you guys aren't just tall and you guys aren't just bigs. You said, quote, Mo is not even a big man, and I don't really like to label myself as big either because we move around. We set screens. You saw him knock down an open three against Phoenix. We can move and switch and guard just about everybody. I bring this up. My question is then, how much pride do you take in the fact that you both have that kind of versatility and that you can do just about anything on the floor?
Well, I love it. I love it, and I know he takes pride in his defense, and I do as well. But just his mobility and being able to switch and guard different dudes in mine as well, I think it makes it very tough for the offense. And just moving forward, adding our great pieces like AG and Simmons and all those guys that are great defenders as well, I think we could be a great defensive team.
We're talking to Jonathan Isaac. One more thought about that. As an example, like, you're hitting pull-ups and off the bounce, step-backs in the post, and people who are covering summer league are pretty much freaking out about it. But at the same time, has that not always been a part of your game? Does that not go back to what you were doing in high school?
Yeah, it does. And I would say not so much of a shock to myself, but just being more comfortable and coaches are allowing me to go to it and giving me ISO options and things like that. So a part of it is just doing something I've always been comfortable with. But at the same time, as I've gotten more comfortable a year in the league, I'm able to show things that I've kind of always had in my package. So it's cool to see everybody like, wow, like we didn't know he could do a lot of this stuff. But it's been something that I've been working on since high school and things like that.
Orlando Magic's Jonathan Isaac is my guest. You know, during one summer league game, you guys forced numerous 24-second shot clock violations. And I want to underline the fact that you're still just 20. So when you look at the growth in your game in the past year, and plus where Mo is, how excited are you to think about where the two of you and some of your other teammates might be in 2 or 3 years?
Yeah, no, it's super exciting. I was told the other day that it's like one of the first times in a while that Orlando is kind of buzzing for our team. And obviously not just because of me and Mo, but just being able to retain AG and get pieces. It's been great, man. I'm super excited for the future. I know if I continue to just keep my head down and work and Mo as well, we can grow so much offensively and continue to grow defensively. So I'm happy, man. I'm excited about summer league. I'm excited to get with the team for training camp and just see what we can do under our new coaching staff. who has been great so far.
Yeah, I'm going to ask you about that coaching staff in a minute. One more thought. I mean, I'm talking to you, and you're a young guy, and last year was challenging. I mean, last year may not have gone the way you'd expected because although you got off to a really, really good start, you had some injuries, and you dealt with that, but you've got a really good mindset, and you're staying positive, you're staying enthusiastic. I think for a young player, it might have been easy to get down or angry or frustrated, but you weren't doing that. You stayed positive. How were you able to do that and stay in the right place mentally?
I would just say it was so tough. It was so tough to be able to do that. I had great people around me. I had a church family around me to keep me built up. I leaned a lot on my faith to get me through that time. But just keeping my head up and knowing what I can do on the court, knowing the work that I've put in and knowing the work that I'm going to put in has just kept me focused. My teammates did an amazing job of keeping me included and keeping my head up and making it all funny. So it was great, and I'm excited to be back on the court. Just excited for the future.
Hey, I wonder if there's something about this, too. If you get hurt and all of a sudden, you know, when you're young and you've never been hurt or you have to deal with an injury like that, you obviously are going to come back with a different perspective. Did you have a greater appreciation literally for everything that went along with the game and the job once you had it taken away for a little while?
Oh, yeah. Just the attention to detail, way more attention to my body and the little things like stretching every single day and getting in the cold tub more and just really appreciating being out on the court and trying to do everything I can to stay out there behind the scenes.
And that's your body. That's your moneymaker. Body is temple. You got to take care of that, right?
Yes, sir. Yes,
how about your coach, Steve Clifford? You mentioned the new coaching staff. I know you've had a chance to spend a little bit of time with him since he was named head coach. What do you make of him so far?
I love him so far. And not just him, the entire coaching staff. I've done most of my my workout with Pat Delaney and Bruce, our shooting coach. But Clifford has been, he's been in the gym every day. He's been watching every single workout. He's been teaching and getting here in summer league. He coached the first two practices. So it's been great to have him here. And he's just he's a good dude, man. He's genuine, but he's a tough coach. And I think it's going to be great for our team.
Dude, he is a good dude. He is a really good dude. Even from a media standpoint, he's a great guy to talk to. Before I let you go, you talked about some of the young guys. How about during last season, Aaron Aflalo would check in on you to see what you were doing and to make sure that you were using your free time and your off days the best way possible. So what did it mean to have a vet like that looking at you and thinking you had a bright future and wanting to make sure you were doing the right things?
Yeah, man. Aaron Aflalo was amazing. He came out here for a game along with AG and T-Ross and Jay Sims. But no, last year he was big time for me. He took me to dinner just to check on me and see where my head was at. Helped me understand that injuries are only going to be for so long that I'm going to get my shot to get on the court and just to stay focused and keep working. He gave me the motto of, what do you say? He just get drenched. Get drenched when you work out, get drenched. Go as hard as you possibly can and your work will take you where you need to go.
Hashtag get drenched. I like that one. So finally, what's the biggest challenge when you make that transition from college to the NBA? Is it the physical side of the game? Is it the mental side of the game? Or is it something else altogether?
I would say it's all of it in one. Adjusting to the speed, not being the best player on the floor is a mental thing for young guys. And having to wait your turn. It's so many different things all packaged in one, but the physicality, you're literally like a little kid to all the guys on your team. They have families and things to do, and you're just kind of just there. So it's tough. It's a mental game. It's a business you have to understand. So a lot of things. I see exactly why it takes a while for players and certain players to really get the hang of it.
Yeah, except you got the hang of it pretty quickly, and the Orlando Magic have got tremendous upside. They're an exciting young team. He was the sixth pick overall in 2017, and once again, tearing it up in the summer league. Jonathan Isaac, my guest. Jonathan, so good to have you on the show. Thanks for making time for me and everybody else. Really good to have you.
Thank you so much, man. My agent, Perry Rogers, told me to tell you what's up.
Perry Rogers, man. How's he doing? What's going on?
He's going good. I had dinner with his family last night, so I told him I was going on. He told me to say hey.
I love that. Yeah, tell him I said what's up, and much respect.
Okay.
All right,
sounds
Jonathan.
Good.
It's great talking. Have a great day. See you, man. Appreciate you too. Jonathan Isaac, man, I appreciate so much about the Orlando Magic. Jonathan Isaac, man, another young guy who's way ahead of his time, years ahead of his time. You put him with Mo Bamba, and there's also like this secret weapon about the Orlando Magic. Those who know. Not everybody knows, but those in the know. There's a guy behind the scenes. In fact, not even behind the scenes, but he's doing work. and he's grinding out and he's making a difference. And believe me, this is a guy that people want in their organization. I'm talking about George Galante. George Galante. You probably know that name, and maybe you can't place it, or maybe you don't know that name, but you're going to know that name. George Galante is a guy who, in a way, aspires to be Raymond Ritter. But then again, don't we all? We all want to be Raymond Ritter. We all want to be Raymond Ritter, but rare is the guy who I could say that about who's got a shot. George Galante might be that guy. Remember that name. Not Dan in Denver, remember the name. George Galante, remember the name. You know, like R squared, G squared, double R, double G. These guys are both legends of the game. I mean, Raymond, it all starts with Ray Ritter, for sure. But Galante's coming fast. Perry Rogers, good to hear that name, too. What's up, Perry? Good looking out. All right, we'll take a short time out. We are open now until hour number three. That could change. Don't wait to find out whether or not that's going to change. Pick up the phone, hit me up right now. Why would anybody roll up on Pac-Man in an airport when Pac-Man's just trying to get to the carousel, get his bags, get the hell out?
Garbage.
It went badly for a dude. He ended up in a hospital bed with a mugshot. That story's coming up. So we hear that Amazon is upping its Prime membership fee from $99 to $119 for free shipping. That's a 20% hike. It's crazy, right? That's not cheap. Especially when Walmart is offering free two-day shipping and no membership fee. That's obviously a way better deal. A better deal and an extra $119 in your pocket. Now think about what you might do with an extra $119. It can be anything at all. Here's the deal for everybody listening. What would you rather do with $119? While you're thinking about that, head on over to walmartfreeshipping.com. Walmartfreeshipping.com for a chance to instantly win a $119 Walmart gift card and be registered for the $1,119 grand prize drawing. That's walmartfreeshipping.com. Walmartfreeshipping.com. And that's an amazing deal. Go there for complete rules and details. 2 business day shipping. Minimum $35 order. Restrictions do apply. Walmartfreeshipping.com.
You're listening to the Jim Rome Show.
That unites us all as we are. Sweet, right? Not only did I make that part of a take, I bumped that in. That's now officially bumper music. So if you know anything about Alvin and his rotation, yeah, Alvin, if that were to like to be a part of your normal bumper rotation, how often would we hear that? Once a week, maybe? Less? Or more? And the reason I made that bumper music is because so many of you have hit me up on Twitter to say, Rome, that song rules. How long? When did that song drop? That song is awesome, Rome. I can't get it out of my head, and I'm pumped. That thing's on an endless loop in my head right now. That's why I bumped that in, because we all do love the Red Sox. And even more importantly, we all love that song. I mentioned the future is really bright for the Orlando Magic. I love that Jonathan Isaac dropped in that Perry Rogers, his agent, who he had dinner with last night, said, hey, tell Jim Rome I said, hey. So Perry Rogers is a really interesting guy. When I think about him, I think immediately about Andre Agassi. Because Perry and Andre were together for a long, 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 long time. So the fact that Jonathan Isaac is in Vegas, Perry's a Vegas guy, that does not surprise me at all. But not just Andre. Perry has also worked with the likes of Shaq, Kyrie, Jason Tatum. And then when I think about Andre Agassi, with Wimbledon going on especially right now, Andre Agassi, to me, is one of the most fascinating athletes I've ever watched, I've ever spoken to. And he wrote one of the best sports books I have ever read in my life. I don't want to say it's the best sports book, but it might be the best sports book I've ever read. Certainly one of the best autobiographies I've ever read. It's an amazing book. I couldn't put it down. People say that. Yeah, I read the whole book in one night. Or I couldn't put that book down. Which is normally bullcrap. Who reads books in one night? You know, that's the kind of book. I couldn't finish it in one day, but I literally could not put it down. It was a fascinating book. One of the best sports books ever. But Andre Agassi has always been one of my favorite athletes ever. Just freaky athletically good, but very, very honest. Really different dude. And I mean that in the best way possible. So I have very good memories about that. Good memories of Raider fan Brad Gilbert calling the program, watching Andre play in Los Angeles. One of my favorite athletes ever. I do not play favorites. Andre Agassi is one of my favorite athletes ever. So awesome to get the shout out from Perry Rogers, too. Bill Curtis tweets, yeah, thanks for putting that ridiculous Red Sox tune in my head for the rest of the day. Hey, you're welcome, Bill. You're welcome. Did you say ridiculous or awesome? Let me tell you something, Bill. If you don't want to hear that song, change your station. Programmers don't like it when a host says that. I'm just here to tell you, that's a great song. And if you tell me otherwise, you're wrong. You got a problem with that song, Bill? You got a problem with yourself.
You have a problem? Turn off your station.
Right, Mike? Right, Mike? We all love the Red Sox, and more importantly, we all love that song. He tweets, thanks for putting that ridiculous Red Sox tune in my head for the rest of the day. I got news for you, Billy. Billy, my man. The rest of the week. The rest of the season, Billy. At TJM502 tweets, I'm a diehard Red Sox fan since the late 70s. I would rather listen to any Nickelback song on loop for 24 hours in a row than listen to the I Love the Red Sox song again. Or is that a fact, Tim? You'd rather listen to any Nickelback song on loop for 24 hours then here, I love the Red Sox one more time. Is that a fact, Tim? Well, how's this grab you? We all love the Red Sox. And always will. Sing it, Tim. Sing it, Bill Curtis. It's magic. All right. Don't make me play that again because you know I will. Come on, man. Don't you ever come in here and say to me you'd rather listen to any Nickelback song on loop for 24 hours than one more spin of We All Love the Red Sox. Because you know that's a lie. It's bull crap. They pay me to call bull. When I see bull, I'm calling bull on that. All right. Stop calling with that so I can get back to my show and talk about things that other people want me to talk about. Namely, Phil Mickelson, give me back my show.
Give me back my stuff.
All right, so it's been a hell of a month for Hefty. I'm not sure I can finish this thought right now, but I'll start it. So remember Phil Mickelson, and this is a big Hefty house. Hefty. Very popular player. I mean, beloved. This guy's so well-liked. Understandably so. He is the people's champ. He is a man of the people, isn't he, Hefty? So he embarrassed himself, unfortunately, at the U.S. Open when he put on that stick-handling display on the 13th green at Shinnecock.
I don't mean it in any disrespect, and if that's the way people took it, I apologize to them, but that's not the way it was taken. I took the two-shot penalty, moved on.
Again, whenever somebody starts a, quote, apology with, if I offended anybody, that's not an apology. If I offended anybody, then I'm sorry. All right, so then, above and beyond that, remember he went high-stepping, like prime time. High-stepping in the fescue last weekend in front of the 7th tee at the Greenbrier, which got him in even more trouble.
You know, toughen up.
Right? Two bad looks. Two bad looks for a good dude. Two bad looks for a good dude, but that'll happen. Even breaking that news that he and the cat were going to square off for 10 mil? Did you see that story? Even that didn't take the heat off Hefty. Neither did drowning his sorrows in a bunch of Froyo franchises.
Yo.
But my man bounces back. My man bounces back as only he can. You can't keep that guy down. Man, he's happy. So he's got that giant smile on his face. He bounced right back. And man, did he bounce back with authority. There is an amazing profile on Mickelson right now running on golf.com. My man Alan Shipnook. Alan Shipnook, as I mentioned, is a great golf scribe. A really, really good writer. Great writer. And he spent a day. And by the way, who would want to do this? You got to have chops to do this, but what would any of us give to spend a day with the big fella? That'd be so much fun. He spends a day with the big man at his home in Rancho Santa Fe. Posh, posh, posh part of San Diego. In fact, Janet and I have talked about if anything ever squared up the way that we hope it will and things go well, that's where you want to end up. You want to end up in Rancho Santa Fe, man. It is an amazing place. Beautiful, beautiful place. And of course, Hefty's there right now. Very posh. And as you might expect, Phil was on his best behavior, putting on his best show, and he showed Alan Shipnook what it's like to be the 48-year-old Hefty, trying to stack a couple of more wins on tour, but living the best life. So, some things that came out of this piece should not surprise at all. Namely, Phil cruises around town in a souped-up golf cart that can go 50. And he's got DirecTV wired in. That's the best life. Now, that's a luxury sled, Jeff in Richmond. A golf cart that can hit 50. 0 to 50 in a golf cart. A golf cart carrying Hefty that can go 50? Some serious horsepower, man. And he's got DirecTV wired in. Also, he's got a morning ritual. We all do, right? We all do. Yours is probably not like his. Apparently, Hefty's got a morning ritual where he crushes not two, not three, not four, five shots of espresso. Five shots of espresso that he dumps into some crazy concoction of almond milk, cinnamon, and coconut oil. Again, living the best life. Or, my man is a gambling addict. Action junkie and super competitive guy. Always looking for a game with one of the tour pros that live in and around SoCal. Oh, good stuff, man. Gold. But let me read one specific graphic from this story where the legend of Phil Mickelson goes next level altogether. Shipnook writes, quote, at the Bridges, he greets every waiter and busboy by name. Stop right there. Again, great dude, right? He knows everybody's name. Everybody. At the Bridges, really nice club. At the Bridges, he greets every waiter and busboy by name. I'm getting so hyped up on it, I can't even get it out. Every waiter and busboy by name. Though neither of us are millennials, we order the avocado toast. Phil's commitment, this is in the article, Phil's commitment to healthy eating and exercising. He owns a black belt in Taekwondo. Began around the time he hit 40. Quote, if I look back to when I won the PGA Championship at Baltusrol in 2005, I was 15 pounds heavier. I looked awful. And here I am 13 years older and I'm in better shape. He says, physically, I feel better. I eat better. I take care of myself better. Most people regress. I feel like I've improved a little bit over time. End of freaking quote. Can I walk this back for a minute? Hefty? No. Hefty owns a black belt. A black belt in Taekwondo. Get the hell out of here. That is astonishing. Now, like I said, they pay me to call bull. I can't legitimately call bull on that. Number one, Alan Shipnook, again, is as good as it gets when it comes to this type of thing. And number two, who am I to say that Hefty's a liar? Yes, I've called him a great con man. Yes, I've said that he's insincere and disingenuous. But I've never said the guy's a liar. Well, except for that time when he stick-handled at Shinnecock and said that it was strategy and tactical. I may have said that he was lying then. Or to put another way, I might have said, stop the lies, big fella. Look, I'm not going to say that this dude's not a black belt because I don't know. I've never been in the dojo. I've never seen him put the time in. I've never seen him put the work in. I don't know. I mean, maybe you're telling me that that dude out there sweating through that button-up long sleeve is a martial arts maven. I mean, Seagal's a black belt, right? Maybe Hefty is. Maybe somewhere in between the three-team parlays, the insider trading, allegedly, the short game sessions, maybe dude is just killing it in the dojo just outside of Rancho Santa Fe. Maybe dude is chopping through bricks, crane-kicking dudes. I don't know. Maybe he has a black belt. If he does, man, all the power to him. That would take such a level of effort, discipline, commitment, savagery. I mean, probably 48 inches long, but hey, man, maybe he wears it. He should wear that. He should break that out. Wear it on a Sunday. Wear it on a Sunday. Whatever it is. A Taekwondo black belt. Now, look this up. According to the International Taekwondo Association, there are legitimate physical requirements to earn that, like sparring and the ability to, quote, competently self-defend yourself against holds, club attacks, knife attacks, and multiple unarmed opponents. That's serious stuff, right? Club attacks, knife attacks, multiple unarmed opponents, and you have to defend against various holds. To earn a black belt, you've got to be able to break a 3-inch board with a kick and with your hand. I don't know. See, that's where things get a little sketchy to me. You have to be able to break a 3-inch board with a kick and with your hand. How can you do that if you can't break 80 on Saturday at the U.S. Open? I don't know, man. My man did shoot 79 on Friday at the Masters. He whiffed on a shot out of the pine straw at Augusta. I don't know. Black belts, man, they can choke out an armed attacker. They don't swing and miss at a Callaway Chrome Soft. I don't know. Tiger wants to be a Navy SEAL, and Hefty actually is a black belt. Hefty. What the hell's going on? Look, I'm glad this guy dropped 15 from when he was one step away from bursting buttons off his shirt a few years back. It's one thing, however, that's something. Congrats. However, it is one thing to push away from the table, and it is another to claim that you can put your foot or your fist right through it. I don't know. I hope it's true. You can't go around saying those things if it's not. There's got to be a way to document that, right? Can I hear from somebody who represents the International Taekwondo Association? Can we document this sort of thing? Is there a library with all the black belts in it so we know who is and who isn't? I'm not saying that he's not. I just wonder when he found the time to get that work in to do that. And if you were to start right now, how long would it take you to get a black belt in Taekwondo? How long? I mean, I'm led to believe it's a minimum of 3.5 years if you're really committed. Does he look like somebody who's been really committed to fitness, discipline, martial arts?
You know, toughen up.
Hey, look, now this has a totally different thing. If that guy's telling all of us to toughen up now, but he's coming from a place of he's got that 50-inch black belt around his waist, that's different. Then he's got every right to tell us to toughen up.
You know, toughen up.
All right, that's different. And again, if Alan Shipnook put it in there, I'm going to say it must be true. Tip of the hat, big fella. Tip of the hat. I had no idea. I'm really impressed. What do you clones think about that? Do you think that's true? I'm usually not one to put something in the form of a question, but wow. Tip of the hat, big fella. I got to get out. Mark Stein's next. Marco, sorry about that. Get right to you. Let's go to that sport.
Live from Southern California, this is the Jim Rome Show on CBS Sports Radio.
Barbasol Razors. Barbasol is finally making razors. It's a no-brainer. What took so long? Check out the new Barbasol Extra 6 Plus with 6 extra thin blades. Save on the Ultra 6 Plus at Barbasol.com. So glad they did that. These tweets. At Amazing Stumps tweets, the only reason Hefty decided to go to Taekwondo is because he thought it was a restaurant.
Hefty.
Leggy Peggy sent that. At Trader Brent tweets, Rome, Hefty is a SEAL. Like an actual SEAL. Rome, Hefty actually has 4 black belts. All 4 are tied together so they can fit around his waist. Signed, Blaine in Tennessee. All right, as promised. So glad this guy's back on the show now. He covers the NBA for the New York Times. The heart and soul and pride of Cal State Fullerton. Mark Stein is my guest. Mark, good morning. Great to have you. How are you?
God, I could listen to that intro all day long.
I could say it all day long, and you earned it too. All right, let me first ask you this.
Does Santa Barbara give you the same respect, just real quick? I want to make sure that they treat you with the same reverence.
By the way, they do. I don't. Reverence might be a strong word, but they do. Hey, Mark, it's important, right? I mean, people like you and I that love our school, it's nice to have that love returned. And yes, UC Santa Barbara gives me a hell of a lot of respect. In fact, I'm going up there this weekend to show the school to my son. How about that?
Man, we're getting old.
Yeah, we are. Yeah, we are. How about you? Does Cal State Fullerton hold you in the same regard?
Cal State Fullerton spoils me rotten. Unfortunately, I cannot seem to interest my kids in making my 15-year-old has shown no inclination to have it on his list of finalists yet.
All right. So, what's he looking at? What is he like?
I'm failing as a recruiter. God, I'm ashamed to even say this out loud. He wants to go. I think UCLA is on his list, and I'm not happy about it.
Let me ask you something, though, Mark. In all honesty, does he have the kind of credentials necessary? Because UCLA may as well be Stanford or Duke at this point. UCLA is really, as you know, really hard to get into.
He might be able to pull it off, but I will do everything I can to prevent it. Whether he has the credentials or not, I can't. That is something that I cannot stomach.
I see you working. Look, I love my son. I couldn't admire and love my son anymore. My boy ain't getting into UCLA, so then there's that. All right, so let me ask you this. You've already addressed the issue head on, and the issue, of course, is the rush of people trying to make Houston, we have a problem headlines if the Rockets sign Carmelo Anthony. Leaving aside that nightmare, what do you make of Houston's interest in Melo?
Look, and they might be proven right because it's not a seamless fit, but they've wanted him for ages, and I just feel like they deserve the benefit of the doubt. The run they've been on, Daryl Morey has been making moves for a decade that continue to inch that team closer and closer to a title. And let's face it, the reason everybody doesn't like it is because it's a D'Antoni-Carmelo reunion, and everyone remembers how badly that went in New York. But I think Mike D'Antoni's a different guy, and he would have Chris Paul there. Chris Paul will manage Carmelo Anthony more than anyone else in that organization. And I think Chris Paul has the juice to do that with Melo more than probably anyone in the league except LeBron. So I think it can actually work a lot better than people say. And if you really want to dig into the advanced stats of it, when Carmelo is switching, he's not nearly the defensive issue that he's been portrayed in other places. And we know the Rockets, that's all they do is switch on D. And then offensively, look at the way D'Antoni changed his offense last season. The Rockets ISO, as much as anyone out there, that's Melo's strength. So I think people are just saying, it failed in New York. There's no way this can work again. I'm taking a wait-and-see attitude. I hope it happens. I think it's going to happen. Everyone I talk to thinks that Carmelo's going to end up in Houston, and I want to see what it looks like. I like bold swings, and it is a bold swing.
All right, so that's the best argument I've heard to date about Melo going there. If, in fact, you're right and everybody else is right and he does end up there, are they closer to Golden State than they were last season, or are they further away?
They're not closer. I mean, you know, I came into this offseason thinking it's going to be crazy because it's always crazy, but at the end of the day, we're not going to see that much in terms of changing the landscape unless LeBron ends up with Kawhi or Paul George on the same team. And it turned out even worse than that. Golden State getting DeMarcus Cousins, we might not see Boogie until February, but it does obviously create the prospect, the scariest prospect that anybody could have imagined, that Golden State is actually better than they were. And I think Jonas Jerebko is quietly going to be a very nice pickup for the Warriors. And, you know, I think they're done, but at this point, you know, who would be surprised if they sign somebody else who helps for the minimum? So the biggest problem the league has is that the Warriors look like they got better. And I certainly didn't expect that on July 1.
Mark Stein, the pride of Cal State Fullerton, joining us. Now, something we haven't really spent a lot of time on, Mark, help me out with this if you don't mind. San Antonio is going to look different next year, at least without Tony Parker. Before we get into the details of that departure and everything else going on in San Antonio, how weird is it going to be to see Parker in a Charlotte jersey?
Yeah, that's one that I thought he would stay, even at the minimum, even without a guarantee of playing time. I did not see Tony Parker leaving the Spurs for Charlotte, of all places. But look, Charlotte does have Nicola Batum there, and they're very close as national team buddies, so I'm sure Batum was putting the hard sell on Tony, and he will have a chance to play there. James Borrego was an assistant in San Antonio twice, so Tony has familiarity with the coach. But Manu Ginobili is turning 41 later this month. He might come back for another season. If he is the last Spurs standing out of the Duncan, Parker, Manu trio, I mean, that's amazing to me. And he might well decide to come back. And then just imagine if he doesn't. Imagine if Manu decides to hang it up. And that means Greg Popovich is still there without all three of those guys, which is, yes, I mean, strange. It's strange at the very least, and probably weirder than that.
Mark Stein, my guest. One more thought about it, too. Parker had lost his starting job this year, but his name kept coming up because of that quote earlier about his injury, where he compared it to Kawhi Leonard's when he said that his own injury was, quote, 100 times worse than Kawhi's. The quote kept coming up over and over again. Parker said that he did not have a problem with Kawhi. What's your sense as to the dynamic between those two?
My sense is that Kawhi had a problem with what was said. Now, could it have been resolved? I wouldn't think the Spurs were inviting Tony to stay, even though it was on a minimum deal with no promise of playing time. I can't imagine the Spurs were inviting Tony Parker to stay if they thought it was a huge, unresolvable issue. But I don't think there's any question that when you talk to people who have the best sense of where Kawhi Leonard's mindset is right now, they will tell you that those Parker comments really upset him as much as anything that happened last season. So I guess if you're a Spurs fan, if you're holding on to hope that Parker's departure somehow at least creates a small chance that things can be mended with Kawhi Leonard. But I'm still of the mind that I just don't see the relationship being repaired. I don't think that the Spurs can get Kawhi Leonard's buy-in. Again, maybe I'm wrong. Maybe I'm underestimating them. You know, Pop is not someone you should typically underestimate. But just all the signals that have been circulating is that Kawhi Leonard's dismay with the situation there is such that he does not want to go back. And so I still think the most likely scenario is that they trade him. Now, they have until February to trade him. So it doesn't mean it's going to happen this week, next week, this month. But I still think the most likely scenario is that they move him.
All right, so on to that point, Mark, the fact that LeBron's in Los Angeles right now, does LeBron make it more or less likely that Kawhi would go to the Lakers?
I think the Lakers, by virtue of the moves they've made, the fact they're signing everybody else around LeBron on one-year deals, I think that's kind of a signal that they know trading for him is going to be hard. That if they have a chance at him, their best chance is most likely to have to wait till next summer in free agency. And, you know, the signals are mixed. Does Kawhi want to play with LeBron? I have to say I don't have firsthand knowledge of where he really stands on that issue. It's been reported that he doesn't. It's been reported that he really doesn't have a problem with it. I can't sit here and tell you that I know where Kawhi really stands on that. But I think the Lakers think that they're going to get him eventually. And that's why you're seeing them try to maintain this ultimate flexibility for next summer.
Hey, Mark, last thought. I mean, it's mind-boggling how little we really know about Kawhi and his mindset and where he's at. In fact, physically, do we have any idea where he's at in terms of rehab? Do teams know where he's at physically?
Nope. Nobody knows. Nobody's seen him. And that's why even as I'm saying some of this stuff, I'm kind of in my own head saying, you know, should I even say what I'm saying? Because, yeah, I mean, he is so far removed, and what, you know, what all of us media scoundrels are relying, you know, we're relying on the whispers of, you know, people who are, quote, close to him. I don't think anyone is talking to Kawhi, not in the media, not with teams. I mean, he is completely sequestered, and that is a big curiosity. Teams don't know how healthy he is, but I would also say there are still plenty of gamblers in this league. A Danny Ainge comes to mind. Morey comes to mind in Houston. I think Philly would, you know, still has huge interest in trading for him if they can put a package together that San Antonio accepts. Someone will take that gamble because he's just that good. I mean, he is, when healthy, he's really the best two-way player in the league. So obviously whoever gets him is going to take a long look at the medicals when they finally get that chance. But I still think the line of interested teams in him is still really, really long.
He is all over the association for the New York Times and the pride, the heart and soul of Cal State Fullerton, Mark Stein. Mark, great to have you back. Thank you very much. Have a great day. Mark, great talking to you. That's Mark Stein. Third hour straight ahead. We start the third hour with a smack-off profile. Do not go anywhere.